Today's episode is brought to you by Angie. Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs and projects done well. Let me tell you, there's the version of it where you try to do something at home, and then there's a version of it where you have someone help you, you watch them do it the right way, and you go, thank God I didn't try to do that myself. I have fully done things around the home that I think look good, and then a bang in the night, and I wake up to a shelf collapsing, a painting falling off the wall. Like, I've seen it all go south. I own a home, and I can tell you, I know how much work it can take. Whether it's everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Whatever your home project, big or small, indoor or outdoor, you can Angie that and connect with skilled professionals to get the project done well. Right now, one of my wish lists is I want a bike for my condo in Milwaukee, and I would love to rig it up on a pulley in the ceiling because I have one of those like lofted ceilings, but I'm so scared to try that on my own. Angie has 20 years of home experience and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app. Answer a few questions and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Imposter syndrome is basically that feeling that you're a fraud, but it does happen a lot when people are almost like fish out of water. So it happens to women a lot when they're in male-dominated fields. Sure. So a lot of women in STEM fields or even like in comedy and stand-up, and it was like that. You know, anywhere where your gender or your race is you're a minority in that department.
Probably hot cosplay chicks feel this way because there's a lot of just regular ass cosplay people, and then there's just a couple of hot ones.
Yeah, and they feel like maybe they don't look like the Joker.
See, or Harley Quinn.
Yeah, maybe people are just saying that they look like Harley Quinn.
I'll tell you, a lot of cosplay guys, you don't really look like ninjas, that's for sure.
Hello, welcome back to Shit They Don't Tell You. I'm Nikki Limo, and this is my husband and co-host.
The Iceman.
Hi. I never know what name he's going to say.
Hello.
Never know.
Some have said I am the Nice Man, which I am not used to.
So that's not correct.
I'm not really used to it.
Nah.
Okay, we'll see.
Nah. Today we're talking about imposter syndrome, and this subject got brought up on a recent episode of JK News, and I felt like we didn't really get to dive all the way into it, and there were a lot of people that reached out to me after that episode wanting to know more, or, you know, thanking me for even like bringing up some of the points that I touched upon. And I actually forgot that I had this. Like, I had this deeply. I mean, I didn't forget that I had it, but I forgot that that's what it was called. Like, because I went through extensive therapy when it, like, after it got to the point where I felt like I couldn't handle my life anymore. And a lot of the stuff that we had to kind of rewire and undo had to do with imposter syndrome. And I think it's important to talk about some shit they don't tell you about. And what I found was at least 70% of the population goes through this at some point in their life.
Whoa.
So imposter syndrome is basically that feeling that you're a fraud, that none of your successes are real and that you don't deserve success. The actual definition of it is...
you're a fraud. You're a fake-ass fraud.
No, that's not the actual definition of it. The persistent inability to believe that one's success is deserved or has been legitimately achieved as a result of one's own efforts or skills. So a lot of people will think that if they do have any successes, that it was because of luck or because of just like they were winging it and they're barely scraping by, or because they had to work harder than anyone else to prove that they, or to like cover up the fact that they're actually a fraud.
Right.
And by the way, disclaimer, I am not a psychologist or professional. I'm just recapping things that I have researched about and then my own experiences.
And similarly, and like disclaimer too, like I'm just the Iceman. So like,
are you the Nice Man?
Some have said that.
Who?
It's kind of new. I don't know. People are,
who?
People are really swirling.
Where are they
that
saying
one
this?
All over. All over.
I need to correct them because yeah. I think that you have reverse imposter syndrome. Like you are
I'm the man
a fraud
too much?
And you
oh, I see.
Think that you're not.
Oh, I think all my shit's legit. I think all my checks clear. You know what I'm talking about?
Right. Yeah. Right. So actually I revisited this book that I read a while back called The Imposter Cure. It's by Dr. Jessamy Hibbard. And it says how to stop feeling like a fraud and escape the mind trap of imposter syndrome.
Nice.
It's pretty direct, pretty right straight to the point. And it's actually a really easy read. It looks thick, but you could finish this book easily in a day or maybe, you know, 2 days if you split up the sessions. But it's, yeah, it really helped me a lot. So highly recommend checking it out if you want to, like, really dive deeper on the subject. But we're going to brush over a couple things today, and I feel like it's some shit that I wish I would have known about that I think would have helped me out a lot. So imposter syndrome was first described by two clinical psychologists, Dr. Pauline Clance and Dr. Suzanne Imes, in 1978 when they noticed that their female students were full of doubt about their abilities and worried about continuing their successes. Because at that time, it was when the paradigm was kind of shifting where women before that time were raised more to be a wife and a mother. So like your whole goal in life was to marry a man who has a stable job, and then you have a bunch of babies and you raise them and you do a good job at that. And then during this time, there was like a revolution that was happening, and women were allowed to go to school. And even though they were getting really impressive marks and grades, and they were getting really positive feedback from their professors, their male professors, most of them described not feeling like they belonged there, they didn't deserve to be there, that maybe there was their success was a result of positive discrimination.
Mm.
Like they, you know, they're women, so they're getting treated like,
yeah, they changed the
there's
the,
a bell
the questions
curve almost
for me and,
yeah. Yeah, exactly. And it created this whole psychological phenomenon, which doesn't just happen in women, but it does happen a lot when people are almost like fish out of water. So it happens to women a lot when they're in male dominated fields. Sure. So a lot of women in STEM fields, or even like in comedy and stand up. And it was like that, you know, anywhere where your gender or your race is, you're a minority in that department.
Probably hot cosplay chicks feel this way. Because there's a lot of just regular-ass cosplay people. And then there's just a couple of hot ones.
Yeah, and they feel like maybe they don't look like the Joker.
See? Or Harley Quinn.
Yeah, maybe people are just saying that they look like Harley Quinn.
I'll tell you, a lot of cosplay guys, you don't really look like ninjas, that's for sure.
My favorite cosplay hot girls are the hot girls that dress like guy characters, or like really fierce alpha male characters, but they somehow make it
sexy.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know how, that's a specific gift.
Like sexy Dragon Balls?
That's a talent.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sure. Or sexy Wolverine, but oh, they're yeah, like girls.
Well, you just put boobs on Wolverine. That's pretty sexy already.
That's true. And the claws make it particularly sexy, oh, yeah. I think.
Aggressive.
Yeah. So it happens to 70% of the population, like I talked about before, but you know, it's this feeling, and we talked about this on JK News, it's just this feeling that you're not qualified in whatever you're doing. So if you got hired at a job and you're making good money, you like secretly feel like they're going to find out you don't deserve to be there.
Wow.
Yeah. And it's bad. It's this constant fear that you're not good enough, and at any moment someone can discover you, and it causes a lot of anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
Some people try to brush it off and say that imposter syndrome is good for them. Like they'll say things like, well, it makes me work hard, it keeps me humble, it means I aim for high standards, it motivates me, it's better to be modest than arrogant, keeps me in check. A lot of those things. Mm-hmm. I feel like those were personally things that I would tell myself when I thought that, like, well, you know, I might be a fraud, but I can learn to be better. Wow. And this will make me do better.
And how was your confidence during that?
Oh, terrible.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, just a wreck.
Yeah.
Yeah, self-esteem tumbled to an all-time low. That's when I finally went and saw a psychologist. And I don't even think she was working on this thing specifically, but it was a byproduct of I mean, the curing that was like a byproduct of all the other things that we were working on.
Yeah, that to me is the biggest problem with imposter syndrome is the lack of confidence that people have.
Yeah.
Because of it.
Yeah, well, what happens is people with imposter syndrome don't realize that everybody struggles with feeling like they're, you know, they don't know if they're good enough for the job. Like when you get a new job, most people, like 99% of people, are nervous. Like
you have to learn the job.
You have to learn the job. You're in a different environment. You know, you don't know the lay of the land yet. You don't know the people there. You know, you're very new and you're acclimating to a different environment. Just the difference between confident people and people with imposter syndrome is that confident people are aware that that's normal to feel.
Sure.
And then
there's the overconfident people who are not aware at all.
Oh, true.
And they're like, I fucking rock.
I rock.
No matter what.
And I think that was for me, that was partly why I developed it is because I saw people like that who I judged as like, well, that person's not legitimate. Like, you know, right. That person is so not self-aware. And so I feel like I overcompensated. Like I never want to be that person that thinks that they're fucking killing it. And they're not, and everybody around them is laughing at them.
Yeah, that would scare me too.
Yeah, and it just started spiraling where like I never thought that I was good enough, and I couldn't see my own accomplishments. I could only see my failures and my shortcomings. And when people would compliment me, I felt like they were just like either they had a secret agenda or they were blowing smoke up my ass or whatever. But I didn't feel like it was real. And then any failures I did have just contributed to confirmation bias, basically. Like everything that I believed about myself, that I didn't deserve success, that I wasn't qualified, that I wasn't worthy.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, see? That's, I mean, obviously I failed.
Yeah,
like,
proof.
I wasn't qualified.
Yeah.
Why did they hire me? Why did they ask me to do this?
I don't deserve things.
Right. And like even with like with the algorithm, with numbers, like things that everyone's struggling with, but it felt so personal. I was like, see? Like why would this video get half the views of that other video I just did if that wasn't luck, you know?
Right, right.
I just got lucky that people watched that one video, you know? So also when you're looking into, if this is resonating with you at all and you're like, I think I have this, there are several reasons why you could have this. And the reason why I think the majority of the population has this is that it all stems back to childhood. Just like every freaking psychological condition classic you could ever think of, it stems back to childhood, because when you're a child, you are a sponge. You don't even know what you are doing to yourself. You just soak up the world around you at a rate that's too fast for adults to even know that they're fucking you up.
Dude, I want to raise our kids in like one of those scientific white rooms that you have to get hosed down before you walk inside.
That'll fuck them up too.
Right? See, no matter what you do, man.
But that's my point, is that you can get imposter syndrome from one environment and the exact opposite environment. So right. When you look at your childhood, there are certain contributing factors that made you develop these beliefs, and these beliefs became concrete. So when you're a kid, when you're under six especially, you don't know anything about the world. Everything that you're learning is probably coming from your parents, maybe some relatives or teachers, maybe a neighbor or two, but like mostly from your parents. And you don't question anything. Mm-hmm. You know, you're told this is the color red and that's a bird. And you're told that over and over and over again. And you believe it because that's the only thing anyone's telling you. And you don't really have the capabilities to question anything. So if you also got told, in addition to like, that's a bird, you also got told, oh, you're the smart one, or you're the smart sibling. Oh, things come easy to you. Mm-hmm. And maybe your successes were discounted because they just said, well, you're smart, so things come easy to you. So that shouldn't be celebrated because it's easy. It's just built in, natural. So you learn to discount your successes because they're easy for you. And then when you grew older and things weren't easy for you, you felt incompetent, which is kind of what happened to me, I think. I started out above average, just like I learned how to read when I was three. I was always just like impressive. Like people will call me smart all the time.
So you got validation from all that.
Yeah.
And if that wasn't happening,
it was just like, wow, she's a wow girl. Mm-hmm. You know, like when I was young, very, very, very young. And when I was in first grade, I was reading at a fifth grade reading level. When I was second grade, I was also reading at a fifth grade reading level. And then all the way up to fifth grade, where I was also reading at a fifth grade reading level.
I read way higher than fifth grade, just so you know.
Damn, that's fucking alarming.
Where's my fucking wow, dude?
What I'm trying to say is when I got to fifth grade, I was still reading at the same reading level as when I was in first grade. It was no longer impressive. I was average with my peers.
Right.
And then in sixth grade, I started getting terrified.
I see.
Because I was no longer impressive. There were no more accolades. An A was expected. It was not like cool anymore, right. You know, and anything less than an A was like, what's going on? What's wrong? And then when I, you know, got into junior high and I was put into GATE classes, you're surrounded by people that are equally as talented, if not more talented than you. And you just start to believe that you're incompetent. The same thing could happen vice versa, where you're not the smart one and your parents are like, oh, you're not the smartest one, but you're a hard worker. And you internalize that and grow up believing that you're not smart, that the only reason you're going to make it is because you work hard. And so you overwork and
the
you just work and work and work.
Just being like, you're not the smart one is so crazy.
Well, they'll say
but
it
you're
in,
right.
in
I mean,
different ways.
They do that.
Like, yeah, they'll say they and I don't think they don't mean to do it. Obviously, parents are trying to do their best job. Maybe some parents are a little fucked up. But for the most part, I feel like you're trying to raise your kids the best you can. And as an adult, I think we brush off our childhoods or our parents' wrongdoings, quote unquote, because we understand them as adults. We're like, oh yeah, like that's an easy thing to say to a kid, or that's an easy mistake to make, or of course you left your kid with a babysitter for all day long every day because you had to work full time so you could support them and raise a family and feed them. So you don't really blame them for, you know, putting their kid in childcare. Because they were being a responsible parent, but the kid doesn't see it that way. You as a child didn't see it that way. You as a child were like, where did my mom go? I don't know when she's ever coming back.
Yes.
And you develop a sort of not feeling safe sense about you, that you could be abandoned at any minute.
And just because you love your mom now doesn't mean that she's not at fault for how you felt as a child and that you carried that with you.
Exactly. Because a child, a baby, does not differentiate, does not have the awareness or capability to understand
why
things
rationalize.
Are happening. They just know that's happening. And when you're a baby, your whole thing is like survive. Like
yeah.
That's your whole job is just to survive. And so you very much depend on these adults and your parents. And you see your mom as not only the person that's teaching you everything, but also as a food resource, you know, when you're drinking milk from her boobs,
mm-hmm.
You know, you see her as she's your whole world.
Yes.
Yeah. So, when you're
now, I barely even call her.
Yeah. I mean, must suck for them. I feel so bad for parents.
I know, right?
Because you don't really like appreciate them till you're older and can
That's
understand
for sure.
everything. Oh, and
yeah.
Even then, you're like, yeah, you fucked me up, but like, you didn't mean to.
Yeah. You don't even know. There's no playbook. You don't know
yeah.
what's going on.
But I think understanding the why, and this is the hardest part, because you don't even realize that those were beliefs that you formed that you've carried with you your whole life until you unpack all of that history and you really start to look at your childhood and like what things were told to you on a consistent basis and what that might have done and affected you and how you perceive the world around you and how you learned as you developed as a person, how that was constantly a contributing factor.
So you started off with a lot of this confidence because you'd get
oh, yeah.
wowed all the time.
Oh yeah.
And then all of a sudden the rug gets pulled out from under you.
When I was a kid, I feel like my self-esteem was very high.
Right.
It wasn't till I was about 9 years old till
So that's when you start feeling like an imposter.
Yes.
I see.
Yeah. And I didn't know that it went back that far. And that's when depression started too. Anxiety, depression, almost every single mental health issue that I had to unfold as an adult happened around that time, when I was 9,
I have a theory
10.
About this as well, where, so yeah, that is around the time I remember being very confident as a kid. And then, you know, you kind of get a little older and you start to question whether you're very good at things or whatever.
Yeah.
And it sort of coincides with your interest in pop culture at the same time, like celebrity culture and media pumping up these celebrities and making them into infallible legends and shit.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not people anymore. They're like these special people that we all have to look at on mountains, and these are schools named after them and all this stuff. I think that's super damaging to kids, especially, because then you grow up thinking that there's a group of people that are special,
mm-hmm.
and I'm just not that.
Mm-hmm.
And so those people have some kind of special skill that they were born with or something. Because that's how you notice when they ask like questions of these people, like Michael Jordan or whoever, it's like, man, you were always good at this shit, or you're just the best ever whoever did it, right? So like nobody ever the focus is not on the work that was put into it.
Right.
You know, the focus is more on how they just turn it on. Like you, Michael Jordan walked on the basketball court and turned it on. He's the best, right? Like
yeah.
That kind of shit.
It discounts all the effort.
Right.
That's another thing. Like if you look at your childhood, like if you look at the way the adults in your life treated you, did they reward success or did they reward the effort? Because for me, they rewarded, I feel like, the effort. And so like if success came easily, it wasn't applauded. You know, it wasn't like recognized as being that big of a deal, because if it came easily. So I feel like that's what made me feel like I need to be working constantly to, like, I need to put in the effort to earn the deserved success.
Right.
And respect.
Yeah, I think I just gave up on wanting that from my parents after a certain point.
Yeah.
When I remember doing you know the story, but they don't. So when I was doing a movie premiere for this movie Smiley, me and Nikki were in. Like, me and Nikki are in the movie. Like, it's a pretty big deal that this had a limited nationwide release and all this shit. We had gone to my brother's Air Force graduation. Like, we all got in a van. We drove to Texas for it.
Yeah.
I'm doing this premiere up in L.A. Never know when you're getting another one.
No.
And
it's very, very hard to get a premiere in a theater release in L.A.
And I invited my folks, and they did not come. So
same.
So it's like, man, I give up on you guys as far as wanting some kind of credit for whatever I'm up to.
Like, my mom felt bad, though. Did your parents feel bad?
I think, yeah, of course. Yeah. It's just one of those things that changes your mind about things. Yeah.
They
right?
didn't realize, at least for my parents, they didn't realize how big of a deal it was until like years later.
Yeah. And then when we were doing Internet Famous a couple years later, they came to that one.
Yeah.
Because I raised hell about the first one.
Yeah.
But it never meant as much to me
uh-huh.
then, because I had already gotten over it. It's like the spell was broken.
Right.
And I just don't go like, you know what I mean? I don't know. I just, something changed in my mind at that point where I no longer seek their approval because I felt heartbroken.
Well,
so I protected myself.
That makes sense. I mean, especially when you compare it to like the treatment that your siblings are getting and then the treatment that you're getting, it's like discounted.
Yeah. And they're military boys, both of them. So then we all traveled to, for the next graduation, which was after Smiley came out. And so, yeah, I just, you know, I'm there and I'm kind of pissed a little bit. I'm not letting anyone know, but I'm kind of like, I never forget anything.
Yeah.
I'm very petty.
That's funny that both of us were pretty pissed at Smiley, and then we were the last ones on the dance floor dancing the night away.
And it's so funny. We were last ones on the dance floor dancing the night away. And also my name was not in the credits.
Oh my God. I was going through a breakup and my boyfriend, well, he was like, we were in the weird middle period where like, I still care about you, but we're kind of like broken up, but I still care about you, blah blah blah. And he was supposed to be my date at that event, and then he was trying to cancel on me last minute while I was getting ready for it. So I was like bawling my eyes out while trying to get ready for it. And I remember your girlfriend at the time and had invited me to go over and get ready. And I couldn't because I was literally crying, like bawling.
Wow.
And she thought felt rejected by that. But I really.
Hey, good thing you didn't, because you guys, who knows what would happen if you guys were close or some shit. Thank fuck for that.
I remember, it was like a lot of just holding that in, because he ended up showing up, but he was on a break from work. And then he left and went back to work.
Yeah, it's just one of those things where you just, and I don't hold it against them now.
No.
It's just something that I realize why I don't care anymore. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I don't call them first whenever something cool happens. Like,
yeah.
I don't get, plus my mom hates my comedy. She really does.
Right.
It's actually very frustrating to talk to my mother about anything that I consider funny that I'm working on, because she does not get it, does not like it.
Yeah.
Doesn't get satire, likes like classic setup punch jokes.
Comedy is subjective and
completely, but
yeah.
It's just frustrating, right? So
yeah.
It's like it gets to the point
where
I'm
wish
like,
that your own parents would.
My dad thinks my shit's hilarious.
Okay,
he doesn't admit to it because some of it's very dirty sometimes. Uh-huh. But he thinks that shit's fucking funny. I can tell.
And sometimes people don't understand satire, like when you do a flat earth video.
Oh my God, that's so funny.
And you talk about how you believe in flat earth the whole time.
I do fucking 50 minutes on flat earth, and then people are in the comments thinking I'm a real flat earther. It's fucking classic. This is why I love my branding. Mm-hmm. I love this shit. But yeah, so it's just the fact that my name got left out of those credits, though, during Smiley, I think was the engine that fired me towards doing Internet Famous. Because I felt so fucking disrespected about it. And by the way, it was an oversight.
Yeah.
By the way, Mike was the one who made the oversight. He's the director of the movie. I didn't write Smiley either. I had nothing to do with it. So my name not being on the credits would have been a much bigger deal.
If you wrote it.
But it's still, it's just one of those things where you go to a movie premiere, you expect to see your name on the thing.
Yeah.
That's what you dream about. You dream about seeing your name on the credits. And the fact that I had that taken from me. And then my family didn't even show up. I was like, oh my God, I'm fucking disrespected by the universe.
Yeah.
And that was my engine, you know? And so you can use a lot of this stuff to make progress for yourself. But here's the one thing it never affected was my own personal confidence. I have a good relationship with my personal confidence.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't, and that's not to say I'm not better than anybody and I'm not lower than anybody.
Right.
That's my whole philosophy on life. So. But it did definitely piss me the fuck off.
I had a hard time counting that as a success, as there were a lot of people praising me and being like, whoa, I just saw you on a billboard over New York City, you know, and like it was a crazy time. It was also the Smiley premiere happened a week before I appeared in an episode of How I Met Your Mother. And so it was almost like what would have been like huge, like milestones in my career. I discounted completely because I was also waitressing still at the time.
Yeah.
I was broke as fuck. And I felt like, well, this isn't success. You know, like this isn't.
Doesn't feel like it.
I mean, yeah, like I'm in a movie. Who cares? I'm in a TV show. Who cares? Because I'm not really like living that life. Like it wasn't my picture of success. And the psychologist had told me that one thing I needed to really work on was not needing my like life to match up with my picture of success.
Yeah.
Because I had a very distinct picture of what success looks like. And it's just impossible. You'll never
chase it forever.
Yeah, you can chase it forever, exactly. And instead the way that we were undoing everything was looking at your life and seeing it as if you were a stranger. So looking at your own life, looking as an outsider looking in and looking at all of your successes and really writing all of those down, which I'll get to in a moment after we break for this ad.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today. The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Today's episode is brought to you by Angie. Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs and projects done well. Let me tell you, there's the version of it where you try to do something at home, and then there's a version of it where you have someone help you, you watch them do it the right way, and you go, thank God I didn't try to do that myself. I have fully done things around the home that I think look good, and then a bang in the night, and I wake up to a shelf collapsing, a painting falling off the wall. Like, I've seen it all go south. I own a home, and I can tell you, I know how much work it can take. Whether it's everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Whatever your home project, big or small, indoor or outdoor, you can Angie that and connect with skilled professionals to get the project done well. Right now, one of my wish lists is I want a bike for my condo in Milwaukee, and I would love to rig it up on a pulley in the ceiling because I have one of those like lofted ceilings. but I'm so scared to try that on my own. Angie has 20 years of home experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app. Answer a few questions and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish, or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Dua Lipa.
You know, when I play my music to people who I really respect or look up to, then I hear my songs in a different perspective.
Cardi B.
I know what it feels like when you feel like everybody turned your back and like, don't ever think it's because you did something wrong.
Harry Styles.
I feel like I'm falling more and more in love with making music each time I get to do it.
You know these artists for their songs, videos, and epic performances.
But they have so many stories beyond their fame.
That's what we're here to share with you on the Spout Podcast.
We sit down with some of the biggest names in music.
And along the way, our guests reveal stories that even their biggest fans may have never heard before.
Check out the Spout Podcast to hear famous people spout off about more than what they're famous for.
And find out who's spouting off next.
Wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, thanks for listening to our podcast. We just want to take a break to tell you to, like, thanks for listening to our podcast. And if you want to rate it, that would be really awesome for us.
Listen, we're on break. We're not talking to you like podcast hosts right now. We're just talking to you like people.
As a friend.
And we just want to say, please rate the show because it helps out huge amounts.
Like, we're not desperate. We're, like, kind of desperate.
We're giving shout outs right now to all the people who are giving it ratings. So huge shout out right now to Brian Jorgensen. That was sick of you, dude. Thank you. God bless. Huge shout out right now to Mark W. in Springfield, Connecticut.
Back to our podcast.
Jenny Blake.
Hey, back to our podcast.
In Tuscany,
and
Florida.
Back to our podcast.
God bless you. Thank you.
Steven.
Thank you for supporting the show.
All right. Another thing on that topic of that picture of success that I think a lot of people can relate to is that when we're children, we see grown-ups as having their shit together. You know, you look at grown-ups and you're like, wow, one day when I'm that age, I'll have my shit together. And that's just what happens. Like, you just naturally get your shit together and you have a job and you have a family and you have a house and you have all the things that make a grown-up a grown-up.
Yep.
And then when you get to that age and you don't have those things, or you're missing one or two of those things, or you have those things and you don't know how you got them or what to do with them, you start feeling like a fraud.
This is where hashtag adulting got out of control.
Out of
control.
Is this hashtag adulting?
Fuck all of you hashtag adulting people.
I bought a washing machine today.
It wasn't fun, but I guess I'm adulting now. Oh, yeah. My God.
I feel embarrassed. I did go through that phase, but I feel like that was when it was new.
At least for you, it was a fucking phase. How about the people still doing it right now on my fucking Instagram
feed? Hey.
Can they just chill a little bit? Guess what? You're an adult. Also, you're successful. Also, you're close to
a
millionaire.
They probably have imposter syndrome.
But it's so funny, though, because I'm like, dude, you're close to a millionaire in assets alone.
Yeah, but a lot of people with imposter syndrome are super successful. Very, very successful people that think that they got there by luck or by working so hard, like they can't stop working. There's two coping mechanisms for imposter syndrome. One is overworking and one is avoidance. So avoiding everything, cramming at the last minute. You ever have a test in the morning or whatever and you wait till the last minute to study and then you pull an all-nighter and maybe you got a B on that test but you're like, well, I probably would have aced it if I actually put some work into it. You write it off because it's like you're scared of that if you did put work into it and you still failed, then it would confirm that you're a fraud and an imposter.
But I think that these people, the way that they do it is kind of like the thumb in their nose at other people, because like it's like, oops, I accidentally woke up this morning, I tripped and fell and sold a TV show. How'd I do it? I'm an adult. Weird.
Well, yeah, they're
I'm
trying
like,
to
fuck you.
Make self-deprecating jokes about it. Self-deprecation is also part of a coping mechanism.
Well, no, but I just see it as like,
you see it because you're on the other side of confidence. You're aware.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just see it as a little cunty. That's all.
It can come across that way because it's almost overcompensating.
Right.
Yeah. It's like, if I make fun of that I'm a fraud, then it won't matter if I'm actually a fraud.
Could be.
In that sense. Yeah. And then the other one is overworking, where I mentioned this earlier, where if you overwork yourself, like, then you can make up for all of the qualities that you lack. Like, you can make up for, if you're not qualified, you can make up for it with time, with like putting more time into it. And then if you never stop working at the expense of your social life, you're working nights, you're working weekends, but at least you won't slip behind. And I had that thing too when I was seeing my therapist. It was that I didn't describe it as that, but more that I always felt like I was dropping the ball. No matter how many hours I put in, no matter how much work I was doing, I always felt like I was dropping the ball, or that I was gonna be in trouble. Like, I always felt like I was in trouble. And
I know why.
Why?
Because you're old man.
Yeah.
Your old man used to make you feel like no matter what you did, you're getting in trouble.
Yeah. Like, I could get straight A's and I could try to make sure all my bases are covered, but he would find something that I would get in trouble for.
Like, and you didn't make your bed and you got grounded for 2 weeks.
Yeah. And then couple that with what you were talking about, your siblings getting treated differently. It was sort of the same thing, where my brother would get praised for really small things. And my dad later, much later in life, when I was 26, I'll never forget it because it was the first time ever that he told me he was proud of me. I was like waiting for that my whole life. I didn't know how to handle it. Really wanted to cry, but he told me right before we walked on a red carpet for a premiere in New York. And I couldn't cry because I was going to ruin my makeup. But I was just like, I can't believe this moment is happening. And he told me that my brother doesn't need it as much, or that my brother needs it more than me.
Like, praise.
Yeah, he needs praise more than me, and he needs to be told when he's doing something right more than me. And the reason he did that was because he saw me as being like him. And he told me, hey, you and me, we don't need praise. We don't need people blowing smoke up our asses. We don't need people telling us that we're doing a good job constantly. And I was like, I kind of needed it.
Yeah.
I kind of really needed it. But yeah, so it caused me to discount a lot of successes because I didn't see them as being worthy of praise.
Right.
Yeah. And so I really didn't put together these pieces until much later in my 20s. Actually, I would think I was 30 by the time.
3 years ago.
Yeah, it was like 3 years ago.
Yeah.
When it really just came to a peak.
Well, yeah, you did this. You were with this therapist.
Well, yeah, but the only reason I started going there was because I was like, man, I am having really bad thoughts again. Mm-hmm. Like, I went through my lowest with depression in 2012. Coincidentally, during the time of Smiley and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And I felt like I got through it, got over it. But then I started feeling all of that again in 2016. It was during a political year. It was... I think just the chaos of the world coupled with all this stuff going on, where I was overworking myself and always felt like behind and like I was going to get in trouble, and I felt like I was having imposter syndrome. And I started having those thoughts again, even fully aware logically that my life was going great. I was like, man, I'm with the love of my life.
That's me.
Oh, yeah. It is you. Yeah.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah. True. I almost forgot. I was with the love of my, like, before I could discount it, because I was like, well, if I was with a stable relationship, or if I was in a stable job, if I was making stable income, then these feelings would go away. But then I was having all of that in 2016, and the feelings didn't go away. The feelings were actually almost worse, because now I couldn't blame it on not having something. You know,
right.
I thought those things would validate me. That'd be like, look, you are worth it. You do deserve this. But it really just amplified that feeling of being an imposter, of that this was all luck, and that I don't know how to sustain this life, because I don't know how I got here. And I don't know. I think it was just luck. I think that, like, I was just winging it. And I don't, you know, even saving up and buying a house was like, well, we couldn't have afforded that down payment if we didn't get those gigs by chance. It was like by luck.
All
like
lined up that
like
way.
What if we didn't get those gigs? What if we never get gigs ever again? You know, it's It's also our in the entertainment industry, like the world that we live in and the industry that we're in, where it's...
There's a lack mindset that comes with it.
Yeah, and it's very like, when's my next job?
Yeah.
Right? And...
Or I might not get it. I better not buy anything because I might not get anything.
Yeah.
I better be careful about everything I do.
And you also discount any skills that you developed or the value that you've built because... you don't have like a firm, like I felt for me at least, I didn't have like a solid, like, look, here's a certification saying that I'm licensed to make this amount of money from this job and this time. Like, you're setting your own rate and you're setting your own value and you're negotiating your own deals, or maybe you have a manager negotiating deals, but you know, it's very, someone else is determining your value almost. And so it's really hard to have a grasp on, an internal grasp on what your actual value is. And so, yeah, that's when I finally just broke down. I was having anxiety attacks every single day, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And you were telling me, because I was, like, little things felt very big. Like, if I missed a video upload or if I...
it was the end of the world.
It was. It really much felt like one thing unraveled the whole, like one thread could unravel everything.
And that's the thing about you, is that you're a very aware person. I tell it to people all the time, is you have two brains, and your emotional brain and your logical brain, and your logical brain can even reach all the way over your emotional brain and be
and explain the emotions while I'm going through
them. So you can be very meta sometimes, which is super weird, because you're crying while you're meta.
Yeah.
But my mom's the same exact way. So I'm very used to, I was used to that already. So when you start doing this in our relationship, I'm not freaking out or anything.
I know. You're the first person that didn't freak out.
I'm the fucking man. Yeah. I love your life. So, but but what's, it's fascinating that you being fully in your, with your facilities with logic can still be in a tailspin.
Yeah. Right?
But then there are times, and I would say this is probably 2% of the time, when you're just in a tailspin.
Yeah.
And there is no logic that's going to reach you right now.
Yeah.
Like, you're just fucking, the world's against you. It's a big swirling darkness and you're fucked.
You can slip, because no matter, I'm going to tell you what I went through to kind of fix this, and it's an ongoing thing. And mm-hmm. like, certain things can really trigger it to come back. And if you don't have a firm grasp on it, or you haven't been practicing, or you haven't been doing daily habits that keep you in check, then I sometimes have spun out, and it does have to do with that confirmation bias that I was talking about earlier, where these beliefs that had been ingrained for so long and then constantly reaffirmed every single time any little error occurred or any failure or anything like that, that got built, it's almost like putting cement over cement over cement, and then I had to chip it all away. But sometimes... a fresh bucket of cement starts coming back in and it starts confirming those biases from before, and I have to really put it in check. And it happens when the emotions come down.
I think my biggest problem is that I'll look back on my own work with such a critical eye.
Yeah.
That I can't love it anymore. It just has to be critical.
That's an artist too, you know?
Yeah, it can be very bad.
Yeah, it feels like your work's never finished.
Right.
Yeah, I feel that way too, for sure. I don't know if that part will ever go away.
Maybe not, but because I just completed two scripts, right?
Yeah.
And these two scripts are my favorite scripts that I've ever written, right? But then I remember my first couple scripts being my favorite scripts that I've ever written.
Oh, that's good. It just means you're progressing as an artist.
Well, yeah, you hope, right? But then I'm also kind of like, you know, speaking to imposter syndrome, I'm also like, wait a minute, am I... just like, I get excited in the moment and then I'm gonna make something bad anyways.
Yeah, right. You like overanalyze it.
Yeah. I don't think that.
Right.
Because I am personally very pleased with this, and with my mind's eye, I'm like, well, I trust my work, but I'm also like, man, it's just something I have at the back of my mind.
Yeah. I mean, that's, I totally feel that, and I think that's definitely part of it. But I think what you have as a strength that I really admire is that confidence part and that self-awareness that you, maybe you'll have it in a moment, but you're always able to get through it so it doesn't, it's not detrimental to.
Yeah, I push through it.
Yeah.
I push through it. I'm very headstrong.
I think when it becomes detrimental or damaging to progress is when you really need to fix something.
Yeah, and I was telling this to somebody because they're like, well, how do I deal with, I have confidence issues and all this kind of stuff. And for me, I just built, I built me, right? Like, mm-hmm. I built this person, and I step into his shoes every morning, and then I wake up and I try to be this guy that I built. Like, we can all be frauds, like, in a way. We can all wake up and go, well, I'm a fraud, I should just sleep all day. But if you're like, no, you know what? I built whoever you are, whatever your first and last is, right? Mm-hmm. Starting tomorrow, I am this person. I am a morning person. I don't make excuses.
Yeah.
I, you know what I mean? Like, I can kick ass. Like, I'm not all of my bad habits put together. Like, you can reshape and change yourself in a day.
Yeah, I think that's what it comes down to, is that you are the stories that you tell yourself. You're the stories that you tell yourself and that you actually accept and believe about yourself.
Yeah, and it's a mindset change, man. Mm-hmm. It's not easy. I'm not saying it's easy to do.
No, but once you kind of figure that part out, it gets fun.
Yeah.
Because then I do things now where I'm like, what kind of person do I want to be this year? And I'll try on a different type of, like, something that I might not have tried before. You know, like when I went into the whole chic wife life.
It's so fun.
It's fun because I'm like, wait, why can't I be a chic wife? Like, what? I would look at the women dressed in nice clothes and I'd be like, wow, that's cool. I wish that was me. Like, I wish that, like, that fit my personality type. And then I realized that I had just been telling myself, well, I'm a guy's girl. Mm-hmm. I wear hoodies and mm-hmm. jeans, and I do love hoodies and jeans. And I'm, for the most part, not into how much time it takes to get ready to be a girly girl. But that doesn't mean I have to discount my entire femininity because I'm a guy's girl or whatever. And I was like, man, no, I really want to try that out. Like, maybe I'm that person. I want to see what that's like.
I'll try her out tomorrow.
Yeah. And then I tried it out, and there were parts of it that I really like and that I kept. Mm-hmm. But then there are other parts that I didn't really like. Like, I don't like doing that every day. And I don't like, you know, any sort of special attitude that comes with it. But I did like feeling feminine.
Yeah, and it was cute, man. And it was, and you had fun with it, right? That's the thing.
It did.
I remember you ordering clothes, and you're like, I'm a chic wife now, and all this stuff. You just rebranded yourself.
And then I did the same thing with our house, where I was like, wait, why can't I have, like, a Pinterest-looking house? Like, why can't it look aesthetic in the way that I, like, look at other houses? Just because we're not, like, living in a mansion doesn't mean you can't make your space look luxurious.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And then after that, I was like, well, what if I was a person that wore satin pajamas to bed every day? You know?
Sure.
It just made me feel luxurious and just, like, what does that feel like? Does that feel good? Do I like it?
And it's fun.
It's,
like,
fun.
Those of you listening, you really can just start to change it just by buying new pajamas. Like, it really is just small things you can do for,
like,
yourself.
Like, if you're going to already think of yourself as a fraud, might as well go full fraud and be like, well, I'm going to try to be a completely different person and see what that feels like.
Yeah, start dressing like a fucking pirate.
Feel like a sense of play with it.
Walk around peacocking and shit and start hitting on chicks at the park. See how well that does for you.
For me, it was like, what do these type of people do? And, like, putting myself into someone else's shoes and trying it out and seeing if I like it or what, you know, what parts I like and stuff.
And that's all anybody does, right? Artists borrow from each other and steal from each other and all. It's the same kind of thing, but
it's
just
like
with
acting.
Personality.
Acting is like that, where mm-hmm. you're like, it's not just surface level lines that you're saying off of paper, but, like, why does this person act this way? What motivates them to act this way? What do they feel inside on a daily basis? How do they wake up in the morning? Like, what's their daily routine? And you just start to incorporate some of that into your own life and see how that feels for you. But there is a competence type. So if you're like, well, you know, I don't know if I have imposter syndrome because I'm not a perfectionist or whatever. You can have it without being that. There's certain competence types that got developed. One is a perfectionist and perfectionism, and they go hand in hand. But their primary focus is on how something is done. So everything is about, like, how the work is conducted and then how it turns out. Perfectionists set excessively high standards for themselves, and then they believe they should deliver a perfect performance 100% of the time, like, no flaws. So if they think that they can't do something 100%, they won't do it, or they won't show anybody
right
that they're doing it, or maybe they'll make, you know, they'll do it like 100 times and they'll never tell the world about
it.
Yeah,
they never maybe launch things.
And they also imagine that others hold them to the standards that they set. So they measure their own friends and family and work colleagues by those impossible standards. And sadly, no one can possibly live up to them. So perfectionists tend to believe that if you want something done right, you must do it yourself. And as a result, find it difficult to trust in others' abilities, fearing that they won't do it properly. And perfectionists also find it difficult if they're not in control.
They'd be very fun to date, I bet.
Totally. Well, you'd never be able to live up to the standards.
Fuck, right?
Then there's the natural genius. So if your competence type is someone who cares how and when accomplishments happen, so they set their internal bar impossibly high, just like perfectionists, but rather than judging themselves by an unrealistically high standard, they judge themselves on whether they get things right the first try.
What?
Yikes. Yeah. But this is kind of how I felt too, where if I don't get it right away, because I've always gotten things right away, I feel like super stupid.
I see.
Okay. Yeah.
To humanize that, because I was very much like, nah.
Well, I don't do that anymore, because now, you know, it takes realizing this and that these are just falsehoods that you've been telling yourself, like that no one is actually holding you to this high of a standard, that's something that you've set for yourself based on something that happened in your childhood, that's the first step to breaking it. And so whatever it is for you, and I don't know what it is for anyone listening, but that I think that was partly mine. If you're this type, you probably got by in school without studying, but gave up at the first sign of a challenge if you weren't the top of the class. That was definitely me, where I was usually top of the class without studying, but the minute I wasn't, I was like, well, this class sucks. Yeah, I fucking hate myself and I'm stupid and what's the point of doing anything?
Right.
And so teachers got very confused by me, because the first half of the year I'd be stellar student. The second half of the year I'm troublemaker, because they're like, we don't know what happened.
I did that in middle school. I had perfect grades.
Yeah.
I literally got 1B and I was fucking bummed about it. And then I looked around and I realized I didn't have any friends. And I didn't know who I was anymore.
Yeah.
And then I was like, fuck this shit. I'm going to be way cool now. And I was way cool after that.
Totally.
But I honestly academically definitely slipped because of it.
In high school that happened, but I just changed all my AP classes to regular classes and then smoked pot every day.
Nice.
Yeah.
And that's good advice too.
Yeah. And there's the solo. I'm just going to brush on these just so you're listening. Like, maybe you can delve deeper into it on your own time. But there's a soloist who defines competence as being able to do something on their own and believes that achievement only counts if it is unassisted. So the soloist cares mostly about who completes the task. To do well, they believe that they must be able to do it on their own. So soloists typically turn down help so they can prove their worth as an individual. And if they need help, they see it as a sign of failure, which evokes feelings of shame and triggers imposter feelings.
Ooh, I've known a soloist.
Yeah?
Yeah. But also they had people that they hired around them, but because they hired them, they didn't value their work. Even though they were helping them do shit, they took all the credit.
Oh.
Fucking crazy.
Damn. I know someone that fell under this category, I feel like, but they just would never ask for help, even though they really, really needed it. But they just felt like if they had to ask for help, that was weak.
Bizarre.
Yeah. And then, yeah, that sucks, because they just constantly felt bad about themselves.
Right.
Then there's the expert, where, and this is all coming from Young, I think, Dr. Young. Dr. Valerie Young, she has these categories, the expert and the fourth competence type. And she explains the expert is the knowledge version of the perfectionist. So they need to know it all and believe that true competence means knowing absolutely everything before you even start.
Yikes.
Yeah. So the primary concern here is on the what and how much you know or can do. They believe if they were really clever, they would already know everything they need to know to master a challenge before they even start. They do not feel satisfied until they have a comprehensive understanding of a subject before they start. When experts don't know the answer to every single question, they blame themselves for being incompetent instead of acknowledging their skill gaps and working to fill them.
Yeah, man. Jesus.
Yeah.
Relax, expert.
And then the last type. I know someone exactly like this too, is the superwoman man. The supers push themselves to work harder than everyone else. Young finds this competence type measures competence based on how many roles they can both juggle and excel in. Boss, colleague, partner, parent, friend, volunteer, host. They expect that they should be able to fulfill them all perfectly and with ease. And if they fall short in any of their self-designated roles, they feel shame because they believe they should be able to handle everything. Supers set unrealistically high standards in every area and are, like the perfectionist, on turbocharge. The only difference between the two is how they interpret their competence, with a super defining it based on their ability to perform perfectly in multiple roles versus the perfectionist, who cares predominantly about their work, career, or studies.
Damn, dude. I knew a chick like that in my neighborhood as a kid, and she drove the pink Mary Kay SUV.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
That's so funny because the person I'm thinking of was also very high in the Mary Kay.
In the MLM?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mary Kay's an MLM. Everybody.
Yeah, she was like this close to getting a pink Cadillac.
Oh, see, those are those people.
Yeah.
They're those people who are like, we're doing a cakewalk this Saturday.
And they feel bad if they're ever not completely happy, if they're ever not like sunshine and rainbows.
Mm.
And they really feel shamed if anyone sees any cracks in their armor or any sort of emotion, natural emotions to have.
Yikes.
Yeah.
And they do Tupperware parties.
And they punish themselves. And it's sad.
Yeah.
Yeah. But those are all different forms of competence types. So if you feel slipping in one of these areas, imposter syndrome can occur where you feel like, I don't know how I've been getting by on these areas. I don't know why people believe that I am capable of such high standards when clearly I'm not.
Right.
And it even fell into my relationships where I felt like, well, if you're picking me, then what's wrong with you? Like, why do you have such low standards?
Interesting.
Because I'm not very good, and I'm not good enough, and I don't understand. Like, if you see me as up here, and I see myself here, then you're fucking warped and delusional, and, like, you are settling.
I don't deserve this.
Yeah.
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 Wow, man. Never had that mentality.
Either you're delusional, or you have low standards.
Right.
Yeah.
That's scary.
Yeah. It is scary, and it's scary that this happens to very, very intelligent people too. Like, all walks of people, people with PhDs, people who are CEOs, billionaires, rich people, poor people, like everything.
Yeah.
Like,
confidence varies throughout every single field, every type of person.
Yeah. That's what I guess that was the most shocking part for me, is that, this could be just so overlooked, or like, it's some shit they don't tell you. It sure. really is. It's just some shit that, like, why don't they help to construct construct your own identity and confidence and stuff? Not this participation trophy bullshit,
which can
also be detrimental to feeling like an imposter when you realize that everything you've ever won or been celebrated for was just
basic shit.
For existing.
Yeah. That's why I don't like Mr. Rogers. I've said it before. Everybody hates on me.
I don't know if he was participation trophy oriented.
Guess what I found out this morning? Because I'm building a case against Mr. Rogers in the public field.
You're stupid.
He sued Ice Cube. What do you think of that shit?
For what?
Because he sampled part of Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood in his first album.
Oh, that's a smart businessman.
Yeah, so Mr. Rogers was collecting a nickel on every single album that Ice Cube sold.
Oh, what a terrible person. He wanted rights to his own work?
Well, I'm just saying, he's still, you know, everyone's like, he's such a nice cat. He fucking sued Ice Cube.
I can't believe that he wanted rights to his own work. That's fucking awful. I'm sorry, I didn't know that about him.
Well, I just think that everyone should take a hard look at Fred Rogers.
Totally. Okay, so before we wrap this episode up, I know you're probably like, okay, you fucking got me in this rabbit hole, and now how do I fix it? So you need to undo a lot of your core beliefs, like I've stressed in this episode of Shit They Don't Tell You. And the first thing I would recommend doing is, this might take, like, set aside 1 to 2 hours for yourself, undistracted, unbothered, cut everyone else off, cut the world off, and really look at your entire life, like your entire life from a baby to where you are now, and list out every accomplishment, big or small, like every single one. And when you first start doing this, you'll start discounting everything. You're like, well, that's not an accomplishment because this is how it happened, blah, blah, blah. No, doesn't matter why it happened, how it happened, just list successes that you've had in your life, achievements you've made, accomplishments you've had, and do it until, like, go through your life over and over again until you really make sure you got all of them. Make this whole list and then read it to yourself every day. Read it every day. Look through this list, and not with a critical eye where you're like, well, that one's bullshit or whatever. No, you're going to read it as if you're a stranger looking at someone else's resume.
Question, what if it's so long that it takes me hours to read it?
I mean, you got to get through it. This is work.
Okay.
And I know, you know, some of you are very stellar people, and you got a long list, and that's a lot of work.
How about I make a book instead of a list?
And when you're looking at it, pretending it's a stranger's resume, I think you'll start to be a lot more excited about yourself, and, like, you'll be more proud of yourself, because that was where the change occurred for me, was when my therapist was like, what if you were someone that got shown this life? Like, look, your life is going to be, you live in this beautiful area, you are married to this person that you love, like everything is, and like kind of outlined my whole life. And I was like, wow, if I heard that about another person, I'd be like, damn, the person has an awesome fucking life. They have a dream life. And they did that and they achieved what, you know?
Yeah, but the fact that it's you, you get completely lost in the discounted fog sometimes.
Because I'm like, well, I know the truth.
Right.
I know the way it happened. I know the real.
But this is how we view other people.
Yeah.
Like, you take their accomplishments and you put it, yeah, you might as well put it in front of their face, because that's how we all see them.
Right. So why was I putting other people way up here when, like, you know.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. And it didn't click at all for me. And it's really hard to undo those core beliefs, no matter how much school you went to or how many degrees you have or how much studying you did. Like, it takes a lot of work, and it takes work over time. So don't beat yourself up if you also can't get rid of it right away. It's definitely a work in progress. But what I've found very helpful for me in recent years since this has all happened is definitely journaling every day and taking a time of self-reflection and a time for gratitude and being grateful for what you have and that stuff. But also, I started doing this every month where I, instead of checking off what goals I hit, like, because I set goals at the beginning of the month, and I used to really gauge myself by whether or not I achieved those specific goals, and none of the times did I achieve all of those goals.
You're
like,
sure.
I was gonna say, like, half the time, no, never did I ever achieve those goals. Like, at least not all of them.
That's because you're a master. You're the best I've ever seen at adding to your plate.
Yes. If I accomplish all the goals, then I'm like, well, I didn't set enough goals. So, I mean, I'm being dumb there. Better set some higher goals. Let's give ourselves a challenge.
I've watched you. We're at somebody's house party. This is like a year ago or something. I watched you that week. You told me, you're like, we're not saying yes to anything. We're not going out anywhere. I got to work on this shit, and I'm not going to nobody's house or nothing like that. We're at their house because it was already a pre-engaged thing.
Yeah.
This is the last one we're going to. They're like, you guys should come over next week. And you're like, ah, okay, yeah. And I look at you and I'm like, this bitch.
Yeah, because I think I could do it all.
Like, yeah.
But yeah, so instead of doing that, engaging my self-worth based off of, or judging my even achievements or successes off of what goals that I had previously outlined for me to accomplish that I did or did not accomplish, I started just listing every single achievement that happened that month. And the first time I did this, I was like, well, there are none, you know?
Sad.
But then, yeah. But then when I, like, actually went through, and this was after I started keeping a planner that had my schedule in it, so it actually had all the things that I did that day in it, I realized that I actually accomplished way more than I thought I did. And it really wasn't until I started, like, listing this out every month. And you might think it's ridiculous, but when you do it, you start to actually have belief in yourself that you're like, there is progress happening.
I have worth.
And there are achievements happening. And not only, well, and worth comes into play too, but that was a slippery slope because I started associating self-worth and my worthiness of love by accomplishments, and I had to detach that.
Scary, yeah.
Because you are worthy of love no matter what you have or have not accomplished. But
correct.
As far as achievements go, or, like, you know, where you belong in, if you are deserve your job or your career or your status in life or wherever you are, that I think you have to continually remind yourself of the amount of things that you do, or, like, the achievements that you've, the small achievements that you make on a monthly basis, on a weekly basis. And then the bigger ones, you have to celebrate them. We've talked about this before.
I love this mentality.
And how much that helped us.
Yeah.
To, because both of us are not good at celebrating our wins.
No.
We're just not good at that.
I already.
And I feel bad for our kids.
I already have things to complain about my win.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That's,
I always
want to
take away from my win.
Yeah. I've never gone to a movie premiere of mine and been 100% satisfied or anything like that. In fact, the next day I'm like, great. Like, I have notes, but I can't change it, you know?
Yeah.
It's a lot of that a lot of times.
And even the most prominent directors and writers and producers, they all feel that way too.
Yeah, man. I mean, look, everyone fails at things, right? I was saying this the other day, Christopher Nolan is one of the geniuses of our time, for sure, right? Everyone's like, man, everything he makes is so dope.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you better believe that that guy had some kind of luck play into where he got, right? But yeah. But he's also a talented person.
Well, luck is where preparation and opportunity collide.
Right. And so I think even there, somebody like that, where we all just look at them and go, man, no matter what he makes, it's fucking awesome. I can't think of a Christopher Nolan movie that's bad. Like, I still see him as a human being mm-hmm. who is capable of failure just like anybody else. Like, I don't build a statue to Christopher Nolan in my head and go, I'll never be able to do that kind of thing.
Like, one time his wife was probably like, fuck me. And then he just ate a burrito and he couldn't get it up.
I've
and
been
he
there.
Was like, oh, shit.
Yeah. He's like, I'm bloated.
And then she was like, whatever.
Exactly.
And then went to bed mad.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. Another thing that I feel like I struggled with personally, and maybe you could relate to this, is that self-deprecation is considered polite and you can feel boastful talking about yourself. I felt like a lot of my humor was based around self-deprecation and I didn't want to let go of that. That was like part of my identity, I felt. And I didn't realize that subconsciously, my subconscious was accepting all the self-deprecation. Even though I was doing it humorously, it was still accepting it. So,
wow. That could be destructive.
I had to really cut back on that. And I do still do some self-deprecation, but
of course.
Not nearly as much as I used to. I used to just like roast myself every second of every part of my art ever. But I think it's equally fun to go the other way and act like you're the best. Like,
yeah, it's funny.
You're like super confident. Like act like, oh my God, I'm so fucking beautiful. Like,
I do have to say though, your recent
you guys catch up
Animal Crossing Island Tour thumbnail was very self-deprecating in a great way.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, I have no life anymore.
I have no life anymore. And it's just you like doing like an Instagram pose.
Yeah.
It was perfect.
Yeah. With my stupid island in the background.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah. So you might worry that others will react negatively towards you, or that being confident makes you unlikable. I did feel that way. I really didn't like boastful people, and I really hated, I saw a lot of people when they talked about successes as bragging. And so it was hard for me to celebrate or talk about any of my successes because I didn't want anyone to think I was bragging or boasting or thought too highly of myself. So I went completely the other way, like
scary
totally
place to be.
Overcompensated, like I never have anything to talk about or never want to talk about anything that I've done,
right?
Because I don't think it's good enough.
Right.
Yeah.
I learned the tool, and this is I'm very much like you on that end, right? But Hollywood is all about,
I know
that,
but that's so, why I'm so bad at Hollywood.
You have to go into every conversation with, here's what I did lately, here's what my moves are, what
yeah.
I did. And I did not get used to that for the longest time until I watched it work a bunch of times in front of me.
Yeah.
Where people just go up to people cold and like, hey, what's up? I'm Steve. I'm a writer. I've made this many movies. I got a movie on Netflix. Blah, blah, blah. And these people's eyes light up and then they completely change their demeanor around these people. Like, it's wild.
Yeah.
Because I think you and I, pretty fucking dope people as far as, I don't care what you done.
Yeah.
I don't care how many
subscribers
you got. I
don't judge you on your numbers or your money
fuck.
Or anything. Yeah.
Are you cool?
Are you a good person? Do you
right.
have cool, strong values?
Because I know people with fuck tons of subscribers who aren't.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't want to be friends with you.
And also, I feel like it brings out the best or the worst in people.
Yes.
Because I've known people that when we started being friends, I didn't judge them by their numbers. They were just starting a YouTube channel. And then their YouTube channel blew up. And all of a sudden, they're too good for anyone.
I knew a cat. Who everybody knows. This is not Shane Dawson. Everyone always thinks it's Shane Dawson. God
yeah.
damn it. Okay. But it doesn't matter. I knew him in the early.
I know who you're talking about.
Okay. He blows the fuck up and he was the nicest dude. He blew the fuck up. And then like next thing I know, everyone is talking about how he's yelling at crew members and stuff.
Yeah.
And like how he's just became a fucking terror. So you do not know people until they get power.
Yeah.
That's when you find out who the fuck they really are.
Yeah. That's why they say money is the root of all evil, because like people get greedy and money and they'll fuck people over. But really, it's just bringing out who they are inside.
Oh, yeah.
So if they're a good person, money does not make them evil. Money makes them more charitable in most cases, more generous. Mm-hmm. But if they've got some shit to work on in themselves, yeah, money can bring out the worst in people.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I see.
Money and power. Yeah, but I hope this helps some of you out there that may have been struggling with imposter syndrome. Just take it one day at a time. Incorporate good habits into your daily life. Celebrate your wins. And realize that you are not a fraud. You deserve your successes. It was not a fluke. It was not a luck.
I do think, though, real quickly, in Animal Crossing, when you go to Resident Services,
yes,
everybody gets 5 stars eventually. And I've seen some fucking.
They're just handing them out.
I've seen some disgusting looking islands.
The first time I got 5 stars, I was like, oh my God, that's awesome. I'm so cool. And then I saw other people's 5-star islands and I was like, this success is not counting. This is not. I'm throwing in the trash.
So that's something
participation.
It's a participation award now. You just got to drop enough islands on, enough items on your island.
Yeah.
So
you just got to have different types of furniture. Okay.
So
you
if you're out different there types. And you're blowing past people and you're fucking dusting your shoulders off and you're like, I don't give a fuck if you're even alive. I got a 5-star island. You might want to reexamine that because it's not that big a deal actually.
Damn, shots fired.
Just saying.
All right, guys. Well, subscribe. I hope you liked it. Rate us 5 stars on iTunes. It really helps us. Share with your friends. Share this podcast with your friends because it helps us. It really helps us.
Thank you, guys.
And we love you. And we need it. We're desperate.
Yeah, we really need it, guys.
We really think that we just got this far because of luck.
Well, also, we had a 5-star island and now we realize it's worth nothing. And so we're really, our confidence is shaken.
It's kind of like, you know, like when you have a podcast, but then like everybody has a podcast. And then you're like,
that happened to us.
Okay, bye.
Please share it with your friends. Thank you.
These days, you can't go anywhere on the internet without running into the most horrible takes.
You know, your good old-fashioned homophobes, or your self-proclaimed alpha males, who are writing 2-page articles titled, How to Score the Perfect Female in 10 Days.
If you are just as sick of these outdated takes as we are, you will love our podcast, Outspoken, hosted by me, Sam Collins, and my incredible partner, Shannon.
We are an LGBT couple who have seen it all, been called it all, and are ready to take on the never-ending world of outrageous online opinions.
Each week, we bring you the most ridiculous videos, hot takes, and hellbent news we come across on the internet.
So come laugh with us as we dismantle outdated ideologies and tear apart the most confident idiots on the internet on our podcast, Outspoken.
You can follow and listen for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever you are listening right now.